This week, the president spoke on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, and the nation paused to remember 50 years since the March on Washington.
Because they marched, city councils changed, and state legislatures changed, and Congress changed, and yes, eventually the White House changed. Because they marched, America became more free and more fair, not just for African Americans, but for women and Latinos, Asians and Native Americans, for Catholics, Jews, and Muslims, for gays, for Americans with disabilities. America changed for you and for me.
On that list of people who still perhaps await the full embrace of the American dream of Dr. Martin Luther King are the millions of undocumented immigrants in the United States. Jose Antonio Vargas, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and founder of Define America, is one of them. He was brought to the U.S. from the Philippines illegally when he was 12 years old. Having now lived and worked here for 20 years, he considers it his home, even though people around him don't necessarily consider it in the same way as his home.
For me, as somebody who's gay, as somebody who's undocumented, as somebody who's, you know, my name is very Hispanic and I look Asian, I'm Filipino, I've gotten a lot of strength from studying kind of the civil rights movement and understanding, trying to understand as much as possible why and how people endured what they had to endure. I publicly announced being undocumented in the New York Times in June 2011. By October of that year, I went to Alabama. Because it was really interesting that Alabama had actually out-Arizona'd Arizona. Alabama had passed the most stringent immigration law in the country, in which if you were driving me, it'd be a felony for you to drive me. There was actually a time in Alabama in 2011 where it was actually a felony for me just to even be in the state.
Before the Supreme Court.
Before the Supreme Court overturned. But what was interesting was meeting African-American leaders in Birmingham and hearing what they had to say and what they had to say and how they were connecting the dots between civil rights and immigrant rights, right? They targeted blacks. Now they're targeting brown people, right? I remember when I first met Representative John Lewis, who said to me that we may have come to this country in different ships, but we're all in the same boat.
You describe that personally your life is a kind of American civil rights pluralist wild card in the sense that you embrace so many elements of groups that have been denied in the United States. I'm wondering if you also bridge a set of narratives that compete in the United States. One is the embrace, the refinement of liberal pluralism, in essentially defining the Constitution to be what it says it is, that all men are created equal. That's one narrative going on in the United States.
Yes.
But there's another narrative, and that is of competing economic groups.
Yes.
Who compete on a so-called economic level playing field. But ultimately what happens there is there are winners and there are losers. The narrative of economic competition is about exclusion. The narrative of pluralism is about inclusion. But they contradict.
And that's the tension. And that has always been the tension in this country. I've been in Alabama four times now since I publicly have outed myself. I've been working in a documentary. I filmed in Birmingham. And I actually did a week-long lecture series at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa. And my favorite part of that was going to a class called Dirty Jobs, in which most of the students, about 100 students, mostly white, mostly male, mostly grandsons and sons of blue-collar workers, construction workers, farmers. And it was really interesting talking to them about reminding them that we were in the South and that the South had been built on the back of cheap labor. Talk to black people about it, right? And now in the South, in places like Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, South Carolina, many of whom are passing these anti-immigrant laws, the agricultural economies depend on undocumented labor. And we tell to Mexico, we say to the border, keep out, right? Yet 10 yards in, what do we say? Job wanted.
So the next 50 years for people like you and the undocumented immigrants who provide that labor is more about the economic radicalism of the March on Washington than it is the pure civil rights message, in the sense that we forget about the labor issues. We remember the sort of dream poetry of Martin Luther King Jr. We're happy to have you in the United States as workers, but in terms of granting you the ability to be prosperous and to be full participants in the United States, that's a tough one for the USA.
Well, but I think it is a moral imperative. It's an economic one, but also in the end, I think it's a moral one. If we are going to convince the American public that immigration is about the American story and about the American identity, right, and about the fact that people like me, as far as I'm concerned, I am an American. I just don't have the papers to show you. To me, that's a part of this kind of evolving American identity that happened way before we created border security and ICE and DHS. That's really the question. That's why for us, the question ultimately is, how do you define American? And Martin Luther King had said, Americans, you know, dream. What I'm saying is, you are an American if you consider this place to be your home. You are an American if you consider this place what you want to contribute to. Somebody like me who went through school here, who worked here, who considers this my home. This is my country. I'm just waiting for it to recognize me. I have seen probably more of this country than most Americans have seen of this country. I've been to 46 of the 50 states. I think I became an American when I know that America and Iowa and the America and Ohio and the America and California are actually the same America.
And you know Manila, right?
I left when I was 12.
You haven't been back?
I can't. I'm not allowed to leave.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
I'm not allowed to leave, yes.
No, and so much has changed. I mean, New York compared to Manila is a small town.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Manila is like one of the biggest cities in the world.
I haven't seen my mother since I was 12. So I'm hoping for immigration reform to pass so I can actually go back and just see my mom and see what I left behind.
Is that a part of the next 50 years, thinking about what the March on Washington meant? You getting to see your mother?
Well, it's just one story and it's just one son waiting to see his mom. You know, when I think about where we are right now with immigration reform and when I think about the fact that President Obama has deported more immigrants than any other modern president, more than 1.5 million. When I think about the fact that we are living in this really fascinating moment in our history, I wonder how we're going to look back at this time and explain to ourselves, why were we so quiet? Why were we so ignorant? Why were we so indifferent? And again, like, you know, I don't want to make any parallels about what African Americans went through and what gays go through and what undocumented people go through, but you see the connective tissues there, right? I mean, the quote that rings in my ear now as I travel around the country is this great Martin Luther King quote in which he says that history will record that in this period of social transition, the greatest tragedy is not the strident clamor of the bad people, but the appalling silence of the good people. And we need the good people in these next few months to really kind of speak up and stand and come out about their support for people like me. Because you know that we're your neighbors and your classmates, and we go to the same stores and go to the same schools, and we live in the same communities. I think once you talk to Americans and look them in the eye and say to them, this is not what you think it is, and I am not who you think I am, my experience has been they get it.
The joyful, optimistic noise of Jose Antonio Vargas, storyteller, journalist, and founder of Define America. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And on this Friday, we want to thank all of you who shared your dreams with us. It's been a amazing look back 50 years. Have a great Labor Day weekend now. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia, and the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable developments in communities across the country.